Stay tuned for a Juno afternoon. We'll talk with Rachel Hutzler about the Douglas Fruiting Forest. Kanan Bosler will be here with details about the Reuse Center. We'll get an update on Parks and Rec activities with Lauren Anderson, and we'll hear about art happenings in Juno during Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more right after National Native News. Stay tuned. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The VA Black Hills Healthcare System Administration has confirmed that personal information for hundreds of area veterans, including Social Security numbers, was accidentally made accessible to the public at its Hot Springs, South Dakota location. As Jim Kent reports, the facility is used by hundreds of Native American veterans in the surrounding area.
Sometime between May 15th and May 17th, a list of some 1,100 veterans was discarded in a trash can at the Hot Springs VA healthcare facility. The list contained veterans' personal information, including full names, Social Security numbers, telephone numbers, and addresses. Although the VA could not trace which employee discarded the list, Associate Director C.B. Alexander notes that a second employee found the list and alerted VA police, who immediately secured the information. Alexander says the VA followed a number of standard procedures during its investigation of the incident.
We set up an 800 number for veterans to call, credit monitoring processes if they're interested in that. Ensured that we had investigated how it occurred to the best of our ability. Then on July 31st, released a press release after we had already mailed letters to our veterans informing them of the privacy incident.
In response to why the letters to affected veterans were only sent out 2 days before that press release, Alexander replied that the VA wanted to make sure that processes were in place to assist the veterans with any resulting issues prior to letting them know about the incident. Alexander concedes that there is no way to tell if the list that was retrieved was all of the personal veterans' information that was discarded, but she notes that there is no evidence at this point to indicate that any veterans' information was actually compromised. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The sacred area, Badger II Medicine, is featured in a publication by the Wilderness Society. The tribal perspective is included, as Deborah Smith reports.
Oil and gas leases from decades past are tied to the history and future of Montana's Badger II Medicine, which is adjacent to Glacier National Park. The history of the region and pending oil and gas projects are showcased in a new report from the Wilderness Society called Too Wild to Drill, which details risks to cultural history and wildlife if development takes place. Blackfeet tribal member Leanne Falcon lives near the Badger II Medicine. She calls the conservation of the area key to cultural survival.
We need to protect the homeland as the Blackfeet and concerned locals have done for the past 3 decades so that our children may have the same spiritual and family experiences as our elders and ancestors.
The Blackfeet tribe has offered other drilling sites on the reservation as an alternative, or leases could be voluntarily retired. A company based in Louisiana has filed a lawsuit demanding the right to drill. The report calls on the Interior Department to cancel the leases if they are not retired or traded, making the case that they were granted without adequate review and tribal consultation. The Wilderness Society's Bob Eakey in Bozeman says the report also features success stories, and there are two big ones in Montana. The Rocky Mountain Front and North Fork of the Flathead were listed in previous Too Wild to Drill reports, and both are now protected from industrial development.
It's important for people to realize that if they step up and advocate for the places they love, you can make a difference.
The report also features places in Colorado, Utah, and Alaska where energy projects are planned.
That was Deborah Smith reporting from the Big Sky Connection, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
KNBA and Recover Alaska are seeking inspiring stories of recovery from alcohol addiction. If you or someone you know would like to share a story of recovery as part of an upcoming online and on-air documentary video project, go to knba.org and click Tell Your Story.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and I'm in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown. Couple items of business before we meet our first guest. The Aquatics Finance Committee will meet at 4 o'clock today at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. Heads up, of course, the Derby starts tomorrow, but be aware if you hear some big bangs out the road that there will be some blasting at Stabler's Quarry between 9 in the morning and 1 to 3 in the afternoon. So don't be alarmed. And, of course, the weather, what a difference the day makes. It is gorgeous and should be lovely through tomorrow. I'd like to welcome Rachel Utzler here. She is president of the Douglas Community Garden, which is not directly connected to the Juneau Community Gardens, although they have many similar purposes. The Douglas Community Garden is the only garden for community use that is on private property, and a new project called the Douglas Fruiting Forest is underway. My curiosity is truly piqued.
Yes. Well, obviously, we actually, as the Douglas Community Gardens, are not taking this on as another third garden whatsoever, but working in cooperation with CBJ, we are actually starting this Douglas Mini Park Fruiting Forest. Basically, what CBJ had a little tiny pocket park that is over near one of our Douglas Community Gardens. It's over on a little dead end of 4th Street, right across. If you are going to veer over to Sandy Beach, you take a right instead. And then 4th Street just dead ends right there. And there's a little tiny knoll, grassy knoll, that is just been grass. And so what we're going to do is start planting some fruiting berry sort of things, and easy to take care of, like rhubarb, strawberries, service berries.
So maybe some of us have had fruiting forests, and we just didn't know it was called
that. You had
fruiting
forests, yes, in your yard all the time. I have one in my backyard that's going bonkers right now.
So we know that there are some fruiting plants and shrubbery that do really well in Southeast. You mentioned rhubarb. What are some of the more unusual ones that people might not be thinking about that the CBJ, under the leadership of Ben Patterson and Michelle Elfers, have envisioned for this so-called fruiting forest at the dead end of 4th Street in Douglas?
Well, we're looking at a lot of different berries. Lots of salmon berries, probably some currants. Currants seem to do really, really well around here. I know that we're going to be planting some beds and doing some rhubarb in those beds, but we're also looking for plant starts. We're especially interested in native edibles, but we could totally use anything that's very simple to take care of because we're not going to have a lot of maintenance, and there's not a lot of maintenance devoted to this place. But we want something that can take care of themselves, things like rhubarb, mint, chives, walking onions, any perennials, any non-invasive edibles whatsoever. So if you're not, and no trees, we're not going to do any fruiting trees whatsoever. They do attract porcupines, and we did have concerns from the neighbors about attracting porcupines. So we're going to do just the basic, very much low-riding ones. Just on a little bit of the hillside, the slope, we're going to leave a nice little meandering path that will go up to the garden boxes on the top. And, of course, we're going to leave the little sledding hill that is used yearly.
Probably for the last century, so the sledding hill must be maintained.
Very important to leave that.
Let's talk about the size of this area.
It's not very big. It is very much a pocket park. It used to be, years and years ago, I actually lived above this area, and it was all brambles, bushes, found like a little barbecue pit down there. There used to be some of those rocking horses because it was a little playground.
Play area.
They had a little bit of play area going on there. But since In the past, I left that area around 10, 12 years ago, and it has basically, they took out the barbecue and the hazardous playground equipment that was, like, buried with weeds, and they have now just planted grass on it. So basically, it's just an extra little spot for the city to mow, and we decided that we could utilize this and really do something great and be able to do a little bit more of the food security sort of business.
Sure,
I know
edibles.
That, yeah, and I know that the co-op or the Cooperative Extension Service has really been pushing projects kind of like this. And this was just kind of a cooperation between the Douglas Community Gardens and CBJ.
Where so they let's just talk width and depth and
well,
we
are
looked
going
at a picture
to,
together. It looks
yeah.
like kind of a little narrow strip
it's a
that
little
goes
narrow
up the hill.
That goes uphill. It has like two tiered slopes kind of thing. The one that's the slopes are pretty they're slopes, so we're actually going to plant berries that would like be more salmon berries, things like that, that would be easier to harvest. And then we're going to do a couple boxes right around the top and everything. The lot itself, just a quick estimate, maybe it was 60 feet by 20 feet.
So a typical community garden is somebody kind of claims a plot, and mm-hmm. they take care of the plot, and they work the plot, and they harvest the plot.
Yes.
Is that how this is going to work?
It's not. It's going to be more of community, not as individuals taking care of the plot. It's actually going to be very minimal maintenance, but there is a little bit of maintenance that will be done by CBJ yearly. We're going to do some dirt work tomorrow in preparation for the
Saturday
work. We're going to actually have a little bit of dirt work pre-done. The Saturday is the event where we're actually asking for some help and volunteers, if anyone's interested, to come over. And we're going to start at 9 o'clock in the morning. Basically, we'll hopefully have most of the dirt work done, a lot of the ground cloth that we're going to be covering for this year while we're waiting for the berries to come in. And we'll probably be building boxes and planting things.
So, folks, do they need to bring some tools or what kind
yeah,
of what would
I mean,
you like them to bring?
I'd say a little bit shovels, small hand rakes, plant starts. We're definitely looking for plant starts. It looks like I think most everyone has the battery drills and things covered. But if you have an extra battery-powered drill, that's always handy to put the boxes together. Works a lot better than nails.
Is the wood already cut and ready to
yeah,
go?
Yeah, we will have all the wood. Well, we might actually be cutting there, but we will have the wood already delivered there. So if you have an extra skill saw, a cordless one, that might work really well too. Bring something to drink. Water to drink would be good. Because it's going to be hot tomorrow or on Saturday. But basically we'll have most of the work ready. We just basically need the bodies there.
And so it's a site prep, it sounds like,
it's
this
a site
weekend.
Prep
when will
and
the planting
building.
Happen then?
Well, we're going to start planting. We're going to try to do as much planting as we can. But, I mean, we are at the end of the season. So we're going to look at what we will be planting further in the fall, what can go in, perhaps raspberries. I know I have extra in my yard that I can always donate. So we're looking for donations of different types of plants and people to come at work and see how this is going to go. This is a new experiment. We haven't done anything like this before. Douglas Community Gardens, like I said, it doesn't really have a lot to do with it, except for the fact that we're helping with the support. I've let all the volunteers, we do require volunteer hours for our Douglas Community Gardens, and I'm letting all the volunteers hours be used for this fruiting forest, too.
How many folks are involved in the Douglas Community Garden?
In the
gardens,
Douglas Community
right?
Garden,
you have two locations.
We have two gardens, yeah, two locations. We probably have about 40 members, 42 members at the last little newsletter that I sent out. We have some new people on the board, so we're actually pulling things together a little bit better this year. Like, we're actually getting a website. We're like, really, yeah, we'll actually have a presence at the Food Fest on the 29th, and we'll probably bring up some information about the fruiting forest down there, and we'll probably just use that and do that at the Douglas Community Garden table at the food festival at the Jack on the 29th also.
So in thinking about the harvest of the edibles out of, we won't call it a fruit forest, but the fruit plot, as it were, who will do the harvesting and see that those items are you mentioned shared to help
well, that
support
be,
food security
is,
in the community. How will that happen?
It is open to the community. Anyone can come up there and go and It is now a community garden. It's a community space. It's always been a pocket park that people just didn't even know about. But now there will be things actually fruiting there. So you can go by and say, oh, I need to go and pick some raspberries today or something like that. And first come, first serve. I know that it takes a lot of effort to go and keep picking those berries every other day is what I've been having to do right now.
Means it's a good year,
but
though, doesn't it?
We need lots of help all the time. And then people can just wander through, and if they feel like weeding, that would be great, too.
So, Rachel, is there a phone number folks could call if they'd like more information about the pocket park that will become a community fruiting garden?
I don't actually have a phone number for anyone, but I do have two email addresses of two different people that from CBJ. Ben Patterson, it's B-E-N and .PATTERSON at juno.org. And then you have Michelle Elferts, and she is MICHELEELFERS at juno.org. And you could actually call me or go ahead and email me, too, if you have any questions. I can send you in the right direction. And my name is Rachel. I'm over at the Jack. It's R-A-C-H-A-E-L at J-A-H-C.org.
Thanks, Rachel. We've been talking with Rachel Utzler. She is president of the Douglas Community Gardens, about a community-based project that is in cooperation with the city and borough of Juneau called the Douglas Fruiting Forest. We'll call it maybe Douglas Fruiting Patch.
We'll get there.
And it's at the end of 4th Street on Douglas. If you were to head to Sandy Beach but not take that left, instead take a right and then go to the end of 4th Street as you head south. You're going to find that little pocket park. They're looking for volunteers who would be interested in helping with a work party this coming sunny Saturday, 9 o'clock at this area at the end of 4th Street. There will be some preparation and some box building. And if you've got some cuttings, you're willing to share of fruiting plants, please bring them as we contribute to Natural Foods in Juneau. Rachel, thanks for stopping by.
And also, if you do have any of those plants, it would be really great to give a heads up to either Ben or Michelle or myself, just so we can keep track of what's coming in
there. So that's Michelle at the Jack. Michelle Elfers at CBJ, Ben Patterson at CBJ, and you can find Rachel Utzler at the Jack. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you very much.
Right.
When I'm given foods that I can't seem to finish, I think about my forest made of spinach. Then it's fun eating what is good for me in my forest made of spinach by the sea. By the sea,
by the sea,
in my forest made of spinach by the sea. I want to be
by the sea,
in my forest made of spinach by the sea. There's a treehouse in my forest made of broccoli. That's why I always eat my broccoli treats. If I didn't eat my broccoli, then I'd have no broccoli treehouse in my forest made of spinach by the sea. Well, the animals that live there are called livers. That's why I always eat my liver. If I didn't eat my liver, then I'd have no animals living in my forest made of spinach by the sea. By the sea,
by the
sea, in my forest made of spinach by the sea. I want to be
by the sea,
in my forest made of spinach by the sea. I call a flower in my forest cauliflower. That's why I always eat my cauliflower. Without my cauliflower, I'd have nothing I could call a flower in my forest made of spinach by the sea. See if you can guess this next part. I sometimes get surprised when I see turnips, because you never know when they will
turn up.
Right, because they're turnips.
Always.
And I love to eat my turnips whenever they turn up in my forest made of spinach by the sea. Okay, now let me really hear you this time. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I can't hear you!
By the sea,
by the sea, in my forest made of spinach by the sea, I wanna be
by the sea.
made of spinach by the sea.
By the sea.
In my forest made of spinach by the sea.
By the sea.
In my forest made of spinach by the sea.
And thanks to Jeff Brown for always finding appropriately themed music, the spinach forest there. Our next guests are from the Parks and Recreation Department of our city. Welcome Kirk Duncan. He is the director since January of Parks and Recreation. And Lauren Anderson has been the director of our ice rink, the Treadwell Arena, for about the last 2 years. Glad to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
It's nice to be here.
Hard to think about an ice rink on a gorgeous day like today.
Yeah, but it's a nice place to cool off.
Well, tell us what's going on there then.
Right now we have our Rocky Mountain Hockey School going on, and we will have a pond hockey later this evening for hockey players. It's game play, so you need full gear, and then we'll close for the evening, and then tomorrow we have an open skate from 12:30 until 1:30, so we're looking forward to that. We've had some open skates this week, which have been attended, and we're excited to get the rink back open and getting people skating again.
Now, Lauren, is there a portion of the year that the rink is drained or not used for maintenance? It sounds like there has been, but that's over.
Correct. Yeah, we close mid-April, and then we open back up mid-August. We opened on Monday. So we're a seasonal facility, and we close the facility, do some maintenance on it during the summer months.
So the first open skate then is this weekend, it sounds like.
It was Monday.
So we've had the opening week.
Yeah, it's opening week, exactly.
Great. Well, Kirk, I'm glad to have you here. What have you learned in the last 9 months since you've been the Parks and Rec director? What would you like people to know about that department that maybe you didn't even know, although you've been a very long time CBJ employee, both as our Eagle Crest director and as Public Works director? What was kind of some insight that you gained as the new director of that department?
Well, it's a very diverse department, and so we know about recreation, we know about the pools, we know about the ice arena, but we also run Centennial Hall. We run the Zach Gordon Youth Center. We run building maintenance for all the city. We run park maintenance. We run landscaping. We run the cemeteries. We run the Eagle Valley Center out the road. We run the Arboretum. It's really extensive what we do, and it's really cool. And I got to tell you, everybody, especially on a day like today, ought to drive out to the Arboretum. The Arboretum's closed on Monday and Tuesday, but it's just before Amalga Harbor. And it's just gorgeous out there.
It's a stunning gem of a place to visit, having been out there. It's a beautiful, beautiful surprise.
It really is. And then Saga used to run the Eagle Valley Center.
Right.
And so with Saga's demise, we took over the Eagle Valley Center. And I think eventually it's going to be the cornerstone and the gem of the Parks and Rec Department. We are looking at refocusing the department more towards youth. So we have a program very near and dear to your heart. We've taken over the after-school program. We were asked to take that over, and I look at really growing that. So we give kids in middle school, any kid that wants to do something after school, we provide an activity for them. We're also looking at getting more into summer camps. Lauren's been very involved in summer camps at Treadwell, and so we're doing a lot of this out of Zach Gordon. We have a new Zach Gordon manager, Jordan Nigro, and she's just great in the community, longtime community resident here, and so she's and eventually we're looking at developing youth employment in the parks. So taking kids that are 16, 17, 18, 19 years old and putting them for 8 to 10 weeks in the park, actually paying them to do park maintenance and landscaping, give them a chance to get a work ethic, learn what it takes to do things. So definitely a youth approach to the department. I'm really excited about that. That's something that certainly the Eagle Crest I was involved with, developing the Books to Boards program and all of that. So doing more community outreach, getting our website up to date, getting our social media, and getting the word out there just how important Parks and Rec are to the quality of life in Juneau.
Do you see the Eagle Valley Center becoming a retreat for youth, or how do you see that being used?
Well, I think it's one of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to be going out to the community and trying to figure out exactly what it should be, because it could definitely be a nice conference center, But also, we talk about maybe putting some yurts out there so people could camp. Kids could go out there for week-long camps. We have a ropes course out there. So there's lots of potential, but we didn't get it back from Saga until about June 1st. And so it was too late this summer to really do anything really effective. So we're spending all this winter trying to plan what we want to do next summer. We'll also be hosting an event at Centennial Hall sometime in May where we get all the summer youth providers together in one place so parents can come and see everything that's offered. And that will give us the opportunity to see where there's some holes. And we certainly don't want to compete with anybody, but there may be an opportunity to develop a few additional summer opportunities for youth. So other than that, not much going on in Parks and Rec.
More divisions than I ever imagined. Lauren, what are some of the other things that happen at Treadwell? He mentioned summer camps. Is that what you referred to when you first started sharing what's going on there? Or are there other activities during the summer that happen associated with the arena?
There have been in the past, and we had a Treadwell summer camp. And it was a day camp for kids 7 to 11, and it was a half day. And this past summer was our first summer that we did not offer that camp. And so we're trying to get back into camps, and it was kind of an experiment to see about different things and with reductions. And so we're hoping that we can reintroduce a program like that, maybe expand on it, and see what the community needs and where we can fill that niche.
What are the challenges for the arena, Lauren? We were talking before we went on the air about the availability of ice time and that there are slots that are open, but that it is a busy facility, not surprisingly. What are the challenges that you face as the manager of that facility?
We have prime time hours that are very much the hours that people want, and that's usually between the hours of 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock. And so we try and balance that out with our most highly used users, the Juno Skating Club, the adult hockey, and the youth hockey. And so we try to find the balance and share those prime hours. But we also have weekend time, and with the adults, they often can skate later. So it makes it really nice to try and work together both within our community organizations as well as our rink staff. And so that can be a challenge. But overall, over the last 13 years or so, we've been able to make it work. And we're looking forward to the season ahead. August is a limited schedule. So we are open 5 days a week. So, for example, we're open Monday through Friday this week, closed Saturday and Sunday. But next week, we'll be open Monday and Tuesday, closed Wednesday and Thursday, and then open for the weekend. But with us having this hockey camp this week, it was important to have the availability this week. And it's worked out really, really well the last couple of Augusts to do it this way.
I assume your schedule's online. Where might someone look to see exactly when those open skates are or, for example, when little kid lessons are?
Sure. So our website is www.juno.org/ice rink/parks rec/ice rink. You can also just Google Treadwell Arena
and
you'll find
up.
It or find it through the CBJ website. And then that's where you'll find our schedule. And please note that we'll open 7 days a week after Labor Day. So then we'll be in a full season.
Easy to remember.
Yep. And then lessons, if you're interested in lessons, that's run through the Juno Skating Club, and the sign-ups are available right now, as well as youth hockey and adult hockey. And we'll be offering some free events coming up later in the month that we'll be talking about with free hockey, and that'll be on the 29th. We'll have a back-to-school skate next Friday. And actually, I'm going to come back and talk about some of those things.
There's a lot going
on. Yeah, so there's going to be a lot going on. But our back-to-school skate is next Friday, and that's sponsored by the Douglas 4th of July Committee, and it's a free event.
Oh,
we're really
nice.
Excited. So we have a couple of free events through the skating club and the youth hockey that
to try to introduce more kids to this opportunity, I would guess.
That's what we're trying to do.
One of the things that Lauren's been really successful at is introducing a third grade program. So in aquatics, we have the fourth grade program where fourth graders can learn to to swim. And then we have the fifth grade program where they learn to ski. And so Lauren's introducing them to the third grade program. And then the other thing that Lauren's doing is she's going out. Businesses can buy ice time. And so, and then they can turn around and promote it to their folks, even general public or whatever. So anybody who's interested in doing that. So it's a free skate. People can come in for free and skate.
So it's a community service, really.
Exactly.
Giving
exactly.
back to the community. Yeah. Kirk, you know, we're talking about, it sounds like, some expansion of what Parks and Rec is doing. But Lauren also referenced a challenge with revenues. How is Parks and Rec able to, no pun intended, reckon those challenges as you look to reach further to youth at a time when revenues are tightening down across our state and our city?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different ways of doing that. But one of them is the example we just talked about, which is getting businesses to sponsor ICE and so that people can come in and use the facility at no charge to them. So it's an expansion, but it's being paid by somebody else. Another situation over at Treadwell is the backer boards, where people can dasher boards, where you know people can buy sponsorship around the rink. So looking at different things like that, also coming up with a variable pricing model where we can charge more for some services and less for the same services at different times. So it's more of a business approach, and it's not dissimilar from what we did at Eagle Crest. Just looking at that, definitely getting out in the community, telling the story about Parks and Rec. And so we're looking at selectively increasing some fees, selectively decreasing some fees to increase participation, going out for looking for sponsorship in the community, lots of different ways of skinning this particular cat. So we understand that there are budget constraints, and we have, I mean, there's no doubt about it. We have a very tight budget, but we look at it every week, and we spend it wisely.
I see park ranger trucks around, and
it's a truck.
Well, I guess I should say I've seen that truck around the Perseverance Trail doing some maintenance in the parking area there. What is the number of employees for Parks and Rec during the summer? It sounds like there's a bit of a seasonal increase.
Yeah, I mean, basically it swells up to, you know, it depends. It can be as many as 600 if you count all the games officials and everything else, but it's about 140 in the summertime full-time people that are doing everything from, as you mentioned, park maintenance, landscaping. The pool staff is large. I mean, we have two pools and we have lots of people working there, the Centennial Hall staff. So it's we have seven divisions that we operate.
And does every division have a volunteer board or a committee that helps guide
the operation
of that division?
So we have a Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, which is sort of the umbrella committee that that advises us on lots of different aspects. But we now also have an empowered board, pool board, which I work with, which are a group of seven really dedicated people that really want the pools to be successful. So I'm really excited about that. And then Lauren's got a new Treadwell Advisory Board. And so it's all about getting community input. Right here in this community, in this area, we're looking at what we want to do with Centennial Hall, where the lawn used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at potentially hardscaping that, which means keeping all the vegetation around the outside, but putting in an area so it's a multi-purpose area. And we could do everything from park cars on it to be able to do concerts there. And the grass isn't quite as useful as some kind of hardscaping. And so we're going to go out to the community and we're going to have a public meeting and say, what do you think? And so we're going to invite user groups and the general public to come in and tell us what they have to think, what they think about things. So it's a lot of community outreach. So we have advisory boards and then we have open meetings and public meetings.
What's the best way for people to get information? Just juno.org/parksandrec?
Yes, I'm not proud of our website. That's one of the things we've got a person now, hopefully within the next month, will be really updating the website and making it user-friendly. At Eagle Crest in the wintertime, there's one full-time person and three part-time people that update the website. I mean, it's a labor of love, and we just really have to get good at it. But that's the best place to go, and then you can, of course, always call the main number, 586-5226, and get information from the main office.
So if folks had an idea, for example, about a summer camp for next year, they could give you a call and chat with you or someone else about that?
Yep, and I think probably the best person to talk to is Jordan.
Jordan Nigro.
At Zach Gordon. And, of course, I have every telephone number of Parks and Rec memorized, so which I don't. So it's the Zach Gordon Youth Center, and Jordan would love to talk to people about that.
And you can find that under the
Juno.org.
That's right, Juno.org. Exactly. Well, thanks to Kirk Duncan and to Lauren Anderson for joining us today, updating us on the a variety of things that are going on with Parks and Recreation. And it sounds like many exciting things to come as you broaden your focus on youth in this community.
It's going to be really exciting. Lots of a really, really good staff. I'm just really excited about the staff that I work with and lots of really good people. So I think we'll see some real good changes coming up in the future. And thanks a lot for having
us on.
Appreciate
you joining us.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 13th of August, 2015. It was on this date, 1931, Dr. Michael Shadid established the first cooperatively owned and operated hospital in the United States. It was in Elk City, Oklahoma. He patterned it after the Oklahoma tradition of farm cooperatives. He envisioned a cooperative hospital which would charge an annual membership fee, and doctors would be paid a salary out of those fees to provide basic medical care to any of the members. There was a big controversy about it, and Dr. Shadid almost lost his medical license for the unethical solicitation of patients. It's the birthday of the first man to print a book in English, William Caxton, born in Kent, England, 1422. The printing press was about 25 years old. It had just started to spread beyond Germany, and Caxton realized the new technology would make the job of distributing a book a lot easier. He had translated a book about the history of Troy, and he wanted people to read it. So he established the first printing press in England and printed all the literature he could find, including Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. And for a long time, people in England referred to printed books as Caxtons. It's the birthday of the sharpshooter Annie Oakley, born Woodland, Ohio, 1860. She was a popular performer in Buffalo Bill Cody's Wild West Show. With a rifle, she could hit the thin side of a playing card at 90 feet. A playing card somebody would toss in the air, and then she could hit it six more times before it fell to the floor. And it's the birthday of Alfred Hitchcock, London, 1899. His father punished the boy by sending him to the police station, and the police would lock the boy in a cell for a few minutes. Hitchcock was terrified of police for the rest of his life, made great suspense and horror movies, including Rebecca, Notorious, Rear Window, Vertigo, Psycho, and The Birds. Hitchcock said, "A good film is when the price of the dinner, the theater admission, and the babysitter were all worth it." Here's a poem for today by Charles Bukowski, "Throwing Away the Alarm Clock." My father always said, "Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise." It was lights out at 8 p.m. in our house, and we were up at dawn to the smell of coffee, frying bacon, and scrambled eggs. My father followed this general routine for a lifetime and died young, broke, and I think not too wise. Taking note, I rejected his advice, and it became for me late to bed and late to rise. Now, I'm not saying that I've conquered the world, but I've avoided numberless early traffic jams, bypassed some common pitfalls, and have met some strange, wonderful people, one of whom was myself, someone my father never knew. Throwing Away the Alarm Clock, poem by Charles Bukowski, from The Flash of Lightning Behind the Mountain, published by HarperCollins and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available in a digital subscription for iPad and iPhone. Subscriptions at poetryfoundation.org/digitalmag. And by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Saturday, August 29th, the Diamond Park Aquatic Center will be hosting the annual Race Back to School Triathlon for children in grades 1 through 5. Check-in is at 8 a.m. with the race beginning at 9 a.m. and entails a 50-yard swim, 1-mile bike ride, and half-mile run. Registration materials available at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. More information at 586-2782.
This is Bird Note. The dog days of August bring hot, sultry weather to much of North America. Just step outside, and you're already looking for a cold drink. Birds need liquids, too. Some birds can go a long time without drinking, even in sweltering habitats. They metabolize water from even such dry foods as seeds and reabsorb fluids internally rather than excreting them. Other birds eagerly seek out water on hot days. Songbirds, like robins, find water at a stream or bird bath. A robin takes a mouthful of water, then tips its head way back to send the water down its gullet. Pigeons drink differently. They're among the few birds that can suck in water with their heads down. Swallows and swifts drink with enviable grace. Gliding low across a pond, a swallow tilts its wings upward, lowers its head to the water's surface, and skims a beakful of water on the wing. And they make it look so easy. Keep your bird bath full, yes, but keep it clean, or the birds could be picking up a disease with that mouthful of water. To learn more, begin with a visit to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott invite the community to attend the annual Governor's Family Picnic Friday, August 14th from 4:30 to 7 at the University of Alaska Southeast Auk Bay campus. Along with First Lady Donna Walker, Mrs. Toni Mallott, and members of Governor Walker's cabinet, they will be serving hot dogs, salmon, and drinks generously donated by community businesses and organizations. This event is rain or shine and entertainment, and a number of family-friendly activities are planned as well. For more information, contact Meg Buck in Governor Walker's office, 465-3500.
Thank you. on the next reveal.
Ha!
The con man.
Oh.
And his mentor.
Everybody, I just finished teaching the Art of Yen course. I teach traders all over the world how to trade the Japanese yen.
Meet the men behind a multi-million dollar investment scam. That's on the next reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRS.
Thursday at 7 p.m. on KTOO News, Juneau.
Well, thanks for joining us on this sunny afternoon, a Thursday. I'm Lori Scandling. Looks like good weather will continue today and tomorrow with some partly cloudy over the weekend, which we know can also mean partly sunny, which we like. Nancy DeCherney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council is with us, as she is every Thursday afternoon, for Arts Up. Nancy, the Hi. Opening of the Jump Film Festival is tonight, is that right?
Well, that's what it says on my little book, too.
Well, I consider your book the official book.
Well, you know, some days we make mistakes, but I think we're right. And as always, this is a free event. You should get tickets because they sell out. It's a very limited, they don't sell out, but they get filled up. So if you want to be sure to get to the Jump Film Festival, stop in at Alaska Robotics on Front Street and get tickets. They have shows tonight. On Friday, they have two shows, 7 o'clock and 9 p.m., and the same on Saturday. So lots of exciting, fun, local, great.
It's Ooh. Happened a number of years.
Yeah, and I can't remember which number this is.
Yeah, probably, time goes quickly, but I think probably 10. And lots of interesting submissions into the, I know JUMP, I believe, stands for the Juneau Underground Moving Picture. I just completely made that up this moment, but I think
right.
it works.
I think you're right.
And all the
if
shows are at
be.
Gold Town Theater, I believe.
Yes.
So beginning this evening.
Yeah, so don't miss that. I know it's a lovely evening, but you can still go inside and see these things. So, and then, of course, Friday is all full of everything. First of all, the Salmon Derby starts real early in the morning. So you're out there, you're fishing all day. It's going to be a beautiful day. It said that on the weather forecast. And then at 4:30, there's the Governor's Picnic.
At UAS.
The first time they've had it out there, I think.
Mm-hmm. They're going to do it like Community Day, kind of in the open area there.
It'd be wonderful. But also downtown, in case you didn't go out to the Valley area, is our last Food Truck Friday. The last one of the summer. See, summer's already like
don't
sailing past
don't
like that.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
When does school start? Like next week?
Next Wednesday. Yep.
Who's thinking of these things? Anyway, so our last food truck Friday of the summer will be that one. And we have Mike Christensen doing freestyle theater, followed by the Last Chance Jazz Band. And because it's really sunny, maybe we'll talk him into playing out on the lawn just because.
People would be pulling over
from the
highway. Yeah, we visited with Greg Williams yesterday about that band.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. So you have, and then you've got the Jump Society. So you just have a whole bunch of stuff to do Friday night, so take your vitamins. On Saturday morning, you'll be out there fishing again from 9 a.m. to 1. There's the Fruiting Forest Volunteer Day at the Douglas Mini Park, which is at the end of 4th Street in Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fun thing to do. There is Alaskans Afield Riflery Principles and Practice Class out at the Juneau Shooting Range. That is from 10 to 1. And if you need more information about that, you can go on our website. There's a link so that you can get registered for that. The Seas Cup Admiralty Cove Race starts at Stevens Passage. For more information, again, there's a phone number you can call. That starts at 10 a.m. Outer Point Trail Ribbon Cutting at the Outer Point Trailhead on North Douglas. That's at 11, so a nice day for a hike, so go out and
do
that.
I didn't know the Outer Point Trail was...
Needed a ribbon?
Was wrapped up, actually.
They must have been doing some new things to it because it's all...
Sweet little rainforest opportunity out there and very accessible.
Yes, and it's not going to be raining, so do that.
Get on out there.
6 p.m. to 8 p.m., the Juneau Orca has a program for volunteer training at the Rock Dump, the Climbing Gym, so you can get involved
in
that.
And this is Saturday still.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 6
to 8. And Saturday at 7 p.m., number 22 Jazz Divas. Talk about things that have been going on for a while. So the Jazz Divas will be at Rockwell. There's no cover for this. Erica Lee, Alyssa Fisher, Marsha Souza, who's been up in Fairbanks and is coming back, Heather Mitchell, Dara Rilatos, and Julie Cozy, who's from Haynes, will be the performers for that. So it's always lovely when they do
up
that.
Up at Rockwell. And yeah. No cover for that.
Yeah, no cover. I'm sure you'll have to have a glass of wine or something, but hey. And then there's the Junk Film Festival, of course. Now, on Sunday, you could do the weekly ukulele jam over at TK McGuire's from 11 to 1. Bob Schoonover is in recital at the Resurrection Lutheran Church. That also is free. That's at 6 p.m.
Is that piano, Nancy? Am I taking that for granted? Or okay?
I am not familiar with him, but I'm going to say that's the case.
He's a singer.
He's a singer. Okay.
And what time is that recital?
That's at 6 p.m., and it's at Resurrection Lutheran Church. We also have Music on the Fly, and that's at like 6:45-ish. Mm-hmm. If you're coming in on 66 or 67, you'll hear the music. And I don't remember who's performing. I forgot to look that up. On Monday, we have, again, the Tlingit Language Learners Group is at the Downtown Public Library in the large conference room at 6 p.m. There is an Juno Icefield Research Program open house at 8 p.m. at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. This is free.
What night is that? That's Sunday?
Monday.
Monday. Mm-hmm. I saw a truck driving around town that said Juno Icefield Research. So they're around.
There they are.
Yeah.
And it is an interesting program. It's nice to learn about that a little bit.
That's Monday night.
Mm-hmm. On Wednesday at 11 a.m., Kristen and Mandy Dixon will be doing a cooking demo and book signing at Shea Alaska Cooking School. You can get tickets for that at Hearthside Books. They're $20. I bet it includes lunch or something, wouldn't you think?
I would hope so. And if folks don't know where Shea Alaska is, it's at the end of the Nugget Mall in a separate building that's perpendicular to the end of the mall.
Sort of faces, I don't remember the name of the street either. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we grew up around here before there were street names.
Just turn left there.
Yeah, it's right there. And from 2 to 3 p.m., they will be signing their book at Hearthside Books downtown. So,
and that's on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a new cookbook for us all to be trying out. And Thursday at 7 p.m., there's Amy, the documentary about Amy Winehouse.
Oh,
that's at Gold Town Nickelodeon.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, so I like to give you the Thursday things because sometimes Thursday sneaks up on us. Have you noticed that?
We loop around. And then here we are again.
Here we are again. So it's an exciting week, lots of things to do. And, you know, if you're not fishing, you should be doing other things.
So, Nancy, we are at the end of the Food Truck Fridays. Was this the first summer that the Jack tried this?
No. We've actually done Food Truck Fridays for at least 3 and possibly 4 years. I think we're going to revisit it, and I would love to have people's comments about this. I think, you know, we used to do the concerts in the park, and then the park kind of got deconstructed and was difficult to put on a concert there.
Right, there was no place to sit after the tiered benches and seating area were removed.
And no place to perform, and so it was just awkward. We did try that for at least 1 year, but we had to haul chairs down there and everything. It was just really cumbersome, and we always ended up back at the Jack because it would be raining. So we figured, well, we're going to be at the Jack anyway. So we started doing markets there. We did Saturday market, and we did Sunday market for a little while. And on those Sundays, we also did concerts over at the Pavilion in Douglas.
That was lovely.
It was, but it was not a real high turnout thing either. So then I think a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, we happened to be noticing that food trucks were a big thing in the States, and we thought, food, of course. We need food. So, and there were a few food trucks around town, so we just thought we would try it. We're happy that we have our 2 food trucks in residence now, and but I'm not really sure that it's answering the community's need for a community concert, and I would be happy to have people send me their thoughts and what we ought to be doing next year. The Slam will be open, and I'm thinking maybe we have street dances or we have a party over it. Do the concerts over there or something.
Close off the street, maybe.
Well, we can't do that.
Close the party.
Probably, but Anyway, we're reconsidering what we do for our summer program.
What is it you want to achieve in that?
Well,
you're thinking of an end goal. What is it? And
I think we do achieve it in some regard. It is a community gathering, and the community concert or the concerts in the park used to be a wonderful time for families and whatnot to come and just hang out and visit with the visitors and sort of just enjoy the town. And I think that's still what we want to achieve. Also, we want performers.
Coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. I wondered what the next step was. And talk to you next week.
Tell me what it should be.
Thanks for joining us on a Juno afternoon. Tomorrow afternoon, Andy Klein will be your host. He'll talk with Russell Heath, former Junoite, about his new book, Broken Angels. Bob Schoonover will be here with a preview of his vocal performance on Sunday. And thanks for joining us today.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay.